Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 383 of the Roguecast, recorded August 23rd, 2022. Hunt Trump.
All right, we had a week off. Nick, unfortunately, has had the drawn the short straw and gotten the COVIDs.
Yep, he held out longer than just about anybody else.
He did.
One's other staffer, and she hasn't been there as long as Nick.
I want to say, Dave, you're kind of our COVID hipster. You had it before it was cool.
That's true.
You had it first, then I had it. Now yeah. Nick has it. We didn't give it to each other, by the way. We all got it independently.
Yeah, in as much as there's anything lucky about any of this, it was kind of good that it seems like we didn't give it to each other. It mostly seemed to happen when we were off duty. And so, yay. You know, we didn't all, like, have to shut down the store.
Yeah, no, we don't worry
about
that.
It's just been a colossal pain in the ass.
Still do.
Yep. But Nick's doing all right. Just so y'all know, it's, a relatively mild case. Yeah.
It's not fun, but he's doing all right.
Not fun, but yeah, and hopefully we will be back next week.
Hopefully we'll be back next week.
Yeah,
we'll
see. Hoping for it. Yeah. So we're doing a two-person show today.
Yeah, and we didn't do it last week because there was a lot of stuff to do.
That's right. And before we started this, Rainey and I were kind of punch drunk as we were planning the topics and stuff. So God knows what's going to even happen.
We don't even know what this show's going to be like.
This could be exciting. It could be like if we'd been drinking, practically.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we both have less time off. I don't know about you. I'm pretty tired.
Just kind of punch drunk is exactly right.
Yeah,
actually,
yeah,
that's the right word.
Also, I made that punch and we got super drunk on it.
if we had some spiked punch in the back on the regular,
yeah,
that'd be great.
That's a good idea.
Just think about that.
We got a sort of a Caribbean thing going.
Yeah, I feel like our customers would enjoy the mellow experience.
The mellow experience.
Can you guys help me find some X-Men comics? Probably.
Maybe. I don't know.
That'd be great.
There's got to be X-Men around here somewhere. Let's try it on the X's.
Yeah, that'd be great. Just a bunch of lushes. So what do we got today?
Right,
what news?
I'll talk about games that have come in the past couple weeks. Spelljammer is the big one.
Yeah, yeah. I think people who are interested in this already know about it, but it's sort of a D&D in space kind of thing.
Yep.
And it's a revival of a property like a setting that had been created in the 80s originally, and is really a very neat setting. It's less like the Starfinder, yeah, the Pathfinder sci-fi version, which really is kind of, you know, like Firefly and Star Wars and stuff. This is like still kind of like more of a steampunk vibe, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, Victorian sci-fi.
Yeah, ships sailing through sort of an ether of space. I know they may have tweaked that some, but I think the basic ideas are in place.
The notion is that each planet has their own little globe of wild space.
Yeah.
And once you get out of wild space, you wind up in the astral sea, which connects to other wild space. So
right. There you can go at like those super, super fast speeds.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, I haven't had a chance to look at the new one, but originally there was like cool, like machinations of like the mind flayers. They were major players out there.
I have had a chance to look at the new one.
Oh,
it's three books.
Okay.
There's a monster manual, there's a adventure, and then there's a player's book.
Yep.
They have a bunch of new races, so they've got, new races to 5th edition.
Yeah,
so the GIF, which are the hippo men.
Yeah, yeah, that's cool. Now, they were around before, but this is, like, probably the first time they've been playable?
Yeah, or at least since... They were a spelljammer race, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, okay, way back when.
They have a facility with handguns, which is kind of cool.
Oh.
There's the amorphous blob people.
Okay.
There's
it'd be like playing Odo, I guess, from Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. Plasmoids, I think they're called. There's a race that is reminiscent of the old Star Frontiers, like flying monkey race.
Oh wow!
Yeah, which
Star
is
Frontiers,
cool.
Man.
There's astral elves. There are, of course. I was trying to think. There's another notable one. Oh, the Thrycreen, who are usually more of a Dark Sun thing, make an appearance here.
Mantis people.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, in your astral menagerie, you got things like the giant miniature space hamsters there was also
some tongue-in-cheek areas here and there.
There's also Gnome Forge, so you can play with basically a gnome-built robot.
Oh.
A steam-powered gnome-built
robot. That's cool. Kind of like an alternative to the...
Warforged,
yeah.
Yeah, these are more like clockwork creatures.
That's cool.
Yeah. Anyway, there's all that. There's all the stuff about that. And they come with... There's a place called the Rock of Brawl, which is like the asteroid... Their Deep Space Nine kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And the adventure takes place on there. So it's a good way to start a Spelljammer campaign. I was very happy about this. This has been out of print since second edition.
Yep.
Like, it's been a long time since we've had any Spelljammer content.
When we're thinking that the format for this, that it came as, like, a sort of a slipcase with all those three books, might be what they do. It will be what they do, we know, for Dragonlance, which
is
coming up.
Dragonlance is doing that, yep.
And other possibly, like, a Planescape, probably.
Although Dragonlance isn't really doing it, because Dragonlance has one book.
Is there not this separate monster manual?
But there is a separate edition that comes with, like, the book and a DM screen and the board game, which is the board game just like the warfare stuff.
Okay.
So they're experimenting a little bit with that kind of stuff.
That's the other big announcement from Wizards of the Coast is that, they've got that coming up and, another beloved property from the 80s. This one, you know, that involves sort of almost like a Tolkien-like sort of war that's going on. That will shape the world. And I think, they're really going to lean into that and allow you to portray a character who will shape the face of the world, like that, a hero who will. And I think that's very cool.
They also announced the what their 2023 slate looks like so far. Not all of it, but the
real quick before you get into that, Rene, I just want to mention one of the kind of neat ideas in Spelljammer is, I believe, to play up these sort of what we would call in the modern parlance a multiverse.
Yeah,
which is to say you're not necessarily dimension hopping, but it's like if you imagine the world of Dragonlance is one planet, Forgotten Realms is another planet, Dark Sun is another planet, and you can travel between them. A character from one world could go to the other, and any sort of blending or interaction that you want with them. There could even be I think magic is like dead on Dark Sun, or like largely has been destroyed. I could see them trying to bring in magic users and capture them from other planets. That'd be a cool plot.
Yeah,
they write
cool.
themselves.
Yes.
Anyway, but if you want to sort of mess around with a D&D multiverse, that is your gateway to it.
Yeah. So before we get to the D&D news, real quick, the store stuff that came in this week. We got that 007 Spectre board game. We choose to play a member of Spectre.
Yeah.
But 007 is like the game mechanic. So the game is trying to beat you while you're trying to be the top Spectre agent.
Right. And it's not cooperative. It's like
it's
all of you,
yeah.
I guess, against the game.
Yeah.
But there's only one winner, and that's got to be Blofeld.
Yeah.
But no, it is like all the various villains of the I guess, the Daniel Craig era. So
I think so.
Blofeld and Lashif and whoever else anybody
Rami
else
Malek's
played.
Rami Malek's weird character.
Rami Malek's weird character. Who was played by, what's his name from No Country for Old Men?
Oh, Javier Bardem?
Yeah, what was his character's name?
I don't know. His name was...
Javier. Let's call him Javier.
Yeah. I don't remember any of the names from that movies.
I will say, though, he was an excellent villain. He did a very good job.
Yes, he did.
And this game sounds super fun. It's playing the villains and trying to outwit a painfully, in-your-face Bond mechanic.
Yeah.
Sounds like a lot of fun, actually.
We also got Betrayal House of the Whole Third Edition.
Oh, yeah. Very in demand.
Yeah, long-awaited reprint of... That game has been out for like a year or two. And alongside that, we got the new game from Hasbro that is Marvel Mayhem, which is the Dungeon Mayhem game.
Which is like a small Dungeons & Dragons fast play
card game.
Yeah, kind of lightweight. You play in like, I think, 20, 30 minutes tops. And this is like the Marvel version of it.
There's Black Panther in there, Captain Marvel, Iron Man, I don't remember who all else, but...
One of our customers who's a teacher picked that up to put in the classroom, and I was like, this should be perfect.
It's a good one, yeah. We also got... Adventures in Rokugan and Midnight, which are the 5e versions of Legend of the Five Rings.
Yep.
And Midnight is a 3.5 setting where basically sort of think of Sauron wins.
Yeah. It was the runner up in the contest that created in which Eberron became a formal setting. So it has essentially been, that means it was vetted by Wizards of the Coast,
mm-hmm.
and they came this close to making it one of their main settings. I know this is, like, a lot of times, you might play rebel-type characters, but I think you will probably rarely find yourself as feeling as, like, much like a rebel on the run as you will in Midnight. Definitely one I wanted to see, because I know there's all kinds of other neat nuances to it, and probably infighting among some of the bad guys who've taken over and all that. It sounds like a cool premise, and I want to read up more on it.
I always forget, you always remember, Dave, I always forget that it's part of the same search as the Eberron game.
Yeah.
Because it feels like a very polished setting.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, is like, that's exactly what it is. You know, Eberron was, although anybody I think could submit to that contest, yeah. Eberron was like, that guy was like a known game designer, and he probably had rather organized notes and detailed
plots. Well, he designed Gloom, so.
He designed Gloom, yeah. That just means that Midnight was like this close to being the winner.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about D&D news, because they did reveal... so the last thing coming out this year, there's the Dragons of Stormwrack Isle, which is the new starter set that should be hitting us in October, that has the characters from the D&D cartoon. It's like the Acrobat and the Cavalier. Those are pre-made characters.
Yeah, that's wild to me, but very cool. Like, I'll have to pick it up. I have rarely bonded so hard with a cartoon as I did with that, and I think it's because I wasn't playing D&D. So it was really like a dream come true, a Saturday morning cartoon right as I was at the right age for it, set in that world, and I was like, well, if I can't play it, this is as close as I'm going to get. So yeah, actually getting something more formally with them is going to be very cool to me.
And then they're doing a Dragonlance Shadow of the Dragon. And this is a...
Is that the board game?
That is Shadow of the Dragon Queen is the name of the adventure, which is the... That's going to be the book. And then they're doing Warriors of Kryn, which is the game.
Okay.
And I'm noticing the name of the designer is somebody who's like... he's a notable game designer.
Okay.
Robin Davio?
Doesn't quite ring a bell, but
Rob
I wouldn't...
Rob Davio, I believe, and I could be wrong, I think he is the guy who worked on Pandemic Legacy.
Oh, interesting.
So yeah, I'm looking up to see what...
And if I'm not mistaken, it sounded to me, I don't know if they used the word legacy, but I got the impression that the Dragonlance board game had some legacy elements in it.
Yeah. Yeah, he is...
Like, you'll move forward with battles, and that will change the next battle, which changes the next battle, and so on.
So, yeah, Robin Davio did, in fact, do Pandemic Legacy Seasons 1, 2, and 0, and also worked on a couple of the Unmatched.
Okay, that's pretty notable.
Yeah.
Those are good. That's good stuff.
And so Stephen Baker, I'm sure, is another designer who's done some stuff. But basically, the Warriors of Kryn lets players jump into a mass battle, make decisions on memorable events during the war, and you basically get to kill a campaign, switching between the adventure and the board game. You can just play the D&D,
right?
But the idea is, like, if you want to do the warfare stuff, there's a board game. I don't think anyone's ever done this.
Yeah, I was talking to a customer the other day, and I think one of the later era Dragonlance modules back in the day had some mass combat rules.
They had mass combat, but not like a full on board game.
No, for sure not.
That's an interesting thing. So that's a big thing. And then of course they did announce One D&D, which is the code name for the next generation D&D, which has set everyone into a tizzy. Assuming that they're going to make 6th edition and then it's going to ruin everything.
Yes.
Which they're not.
This is what we would understand to be like a 5.5 thing.
Essentially, yeah.
And as, you know, I looked at a little bit of some of the reviews notes you sent me on it, Randy, from someone who just kind of first looked stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And it sounded like, by and large, a lot of it was taking things that had already happened in various D&D updates and just... working them into the core and into core rules.
Yep.
New racial modification stuff for characters and I forget what all those. But the stuff that's what were the things that have been released that had some of those little updates?
It's playtesting on
not
D&D
Volos, beyond. But
you
know the various D&D has had some rules updates and character creation updates in other modules leading up to this.
Oh, like Xanatar's.
That was what I was trying to think of. And so, like, it's going to essentially integrate those right just into the rules. They were already added on there, though.
Yeah. There's some new stuff that we haven't seen before. They're making some changes. So
yeah, they're rethinking spells a little bit, and I think the way what advantage and disadvantage works a little.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. I think at this point it's a little too early for me to make a call on it. Certainly too early to panic as well.
Yeah. Well, not if you ask the internet.
Not if you ask the internet.
Their 2023 output looks pretty good. So the first release is going to be Keys from the Golden Vault, which is basically a bunch of short adventures revolving around heists. That is right up my alley.
That is an excellent theme.
Yep. Then Bigby Presents Glory of the Giants, which is a sort of companion to Fizban's Treasury of Dragons, but it's a giant-focused thing.
Yep.
The Book of Many Things, which is going to collect creatures, locations, and other goodies that connect to the mysterious Deck of Many Things. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, it sounds like they sort of built an adventure, campaign, whatever, yeah. Around the Deck of Many Things, which sounds fun.
Then the Phandelver campaign, which expands the adventure from the starter set.
Right, that Mines of Phandelver is an adventure a lot of people played through that starter set. It's a very good adventure.
It says it expands to a full campaign tinged with cosmic horror.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool.
You know, that means Aboleths.
It does.
Maybe, probably. I don't know, probably.
And then Planescape, which is going to have a slipcase just like Spelljammer.
Nice.
Yeah.
And Planescape is like their actual sort of like you know, revolves around their city that's like links the various alternate dimensions and worlds and things like that. So it'll actually probably go rather nicely, I think, with Spelljammer. Both of those have multiverse elements.
Also, so we're gonna have Lord of the Rings in Magic. They're gonna do a Lord of the Rings set and a Doctor Who set.
That's is so weird to me. Yep.
And then they're going to explore the story of Phyrexia, one of their worlds, with All Will Be One, March of the Machine, and The Brothers War. So lots of, and then they're going to do Eldraine, which is sort of a classic fairy tales.
Yeah.
And then Lost Caverns of Ixalan, which is pirates, dinosaurs, and vampires. So all sounds fun.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, we got our first look at the Knives Out sequel coming. It's going to come the day before Christmas Eve on Netflix.
So it's like a little holiday treat.
It is called The Glass Onion.
It's a weird name, but Randy, as you noted, it sounds like in the... You know, by the way, we love Knives Out.
Knives Out's great. It's a great movie. It was fantastic.
Everybody should watch it. It's like a... Very much, you know, if you like Clue, or if you like, you know, mystery movies and books and stuff in general... You know, it was both a great update of it, it's like a legit good mystery, but also witty and funny. Great ensemble cast of actors, and a showpiece for Daniel Craig, having what I have to feel like was much more fun than the Bond movies.
Yeah.
I feel like he was always dragging his feet on those, always cranky about them. But this looks like he was just having the best of times as Benoit Blanc, a kind of unusual private investigator. Randy, you the title thing reminded me. You likened it to his the line where he's describing the mystery donut. As a donut.
Yep, he likes to do that kind of thing.
Yeah, in the previous.
So this is the cast includes Catherine Hahn, Jessica Henwick, Kate Hudson, Edward Norton, Janelle Monáe, Leslie Odom Jr., Dave Bautista, and Ethan Hawke. Norton is going to play a tech billionaire, invites his friends for a holiday on his private Greek island, but things take a turn when one of them turns up dead, which is a very
And then there were none, Agatha Christie style thing.
Yep.
Which, by the way, that is like one of my favorite concepts. I really like various iterations of that.
It's true. You did that for your birthday when you remember you killed that one guy.
I am actually literally going to be in like a murder mystery birthday thing next week.
Will there be actual murders?
I don't know. I've never done one before, but I guess so.
So it could be.
I don't think you plan on it. I think at a certain point the lights go out and someone's dead.
That seems possible.
Anyway, so this could be my last podcast.
It could just be. A heads up. It could be. If you don't know anything about the murder, you're probably the victim.
That is an excellent point.
Anyway, super excited to have more Knives Out.
Yeah.
There
is, you know, we talked about this whenever we've brought it up before. It's like, who knows if they can quite catch lightning in a bottle again. But, you know, if it's even like, I'm going to say half to a third to two-thirds as good, then I will be happy with that, revisiting that character and Rian Johnson's, you know, witty mystery writing.
Yeah. This one's weird. Sam and Victor's Day Off is coming.
Is it actually happening?
It's what it's called. It is in development, I guess. It's,
okay.
The creators of Cobra Kai, or at least one of the creators of Cobra Kai, Bill Posley and Paul Young, John Hurwitz, Hayden Schlossberg, and Josh Yield, all of whom created Cobra Kai, are working to create a show about the two valets in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yep. You remember the guys who took Cameron's dad's car out for a joyride. Yep. Which I think they used, was it the music from Star Wars?
Yep.
As you see them slow-mo, flying through the air at like 100 miles an hour. Now, I had heard sequel to Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Cobra Kai, creative team involved, and I was like, oh my god, they might be the guys who could pull it off.
Yep.
You get kind of like a close-to-retirement Ferris and Cameron. Randy, you had a few ideas about how this could possibly go, and I was like, "Oh, that's good. There's definitely things you could do there. Modern things, you know, stuff that's happened. All these things that have happened since that you could talk about and comment on. And there's work issues, and you know, you could reverse roles or not, and like all sorts of stuff. And then I was like, "Oh, it's just about the guys who stole his car."
I don't know. I lost a lot of enthusiasm for it. The only thing holding my interest is that I love Cobra Kai.
Right.
And more than I ever expected to.
Now, the thing with one of the things that makes Cobra Kai so fun, though, is that it deals, like, it deep dive into the mythology of Karate Kid. Mm-hmm. Just about everything that was ever mentioned in Karate Kid, some way finds its way in there and gets, you know, they you know, move that timeline forward, what, 30 years or whatever it is, and did it in all these very clever and insightful ways. And, like, but like, if they were doing that with Ferris Bueller's lore, also, game for it. But this would be presumably set in during the same time as the movie, I guess.
Yeah.
And I'm like, sure, maybe as a one-off movie or something like that, it could be kind of fun to do just a dumb, fun comedy by the guys who stole the car. But it is just not, it's so not intuitively good.
I don't know. We'll see how it goes. I like I say, Cobra Kai creators, what holds my interest, but it's not what I wanted to be when I first saw the headline.
Yeah.
We may be getting Garth Marenghi's Terror Tome in November.
Now, I don't think this is a kind of still a cult show. I don't know if that many people know about Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. This was like, at the time it came out, I think early 2000s, maybe late 90s, but I think early 2000s. And stars like people who would go on to become very well known, like in... long story short, it's a send-up of, like, horror fiction, horror, especially campy horror TV from, like, the 80s. Like,
it's a British show.
It was made in the present, but it's, like, it purports to be a lost show from the 80s, and with commentary from 10 or 20 years later, actors and directors and producers.
Am I wrong? Matt Berry's in this, right?
Matt Berry is the best friend of Garth Marenghi. Yep. Or that is to say, the character he plays in the story, a character who's like very much kind of like an egotistical kind of dumpy Stephen King of England, like a trashier Stephen King, but very egotistical. He plays the lead role in it. Like, imagine if Stephen King had played the lead role in one of his horror movies. He has been in one or two of those, and you saw how it worked out. It's not good. anyway, his best buddy in this place. It's a haunted hospital. And his best buddy is played by Matt Berry. The head of the hospital is played by dude from IT Crowd,
Richard Ayoade.
Yep.
I think he co-writes and co-created.
Yeah, and it is fantastic. Like, if you like any IT Crowd or any of the what's the modern thing? What we do in Shadows?
What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah, with Matt Berry. Yep. Like, if you like any of those things that Matt Berry is in, like, you should absolutely see Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. It is hilarious. It's only like 6 or 8 episodes long, and has lots of funny behind the scenes fake interviews and stuff.
Yep.
And now they are doing, set in that same fake universe, a novel that would have been one of his novels.
It purports to be his novels. It has 3 stories in it, so it's like the Skeleton Crew kind of thing.
Because they several times, like during his little. He introduces each episode almost like he's like, you know, tonight we're going to go back and look at a terrifying story about a giant placenta that attacks Bristol. It's like these ridiculous, very British usually concepts, but also cheesily gory and stuff like that. He introduces them and then sometimes reads excerpts from his own work because he's clearly very into it. And so, like, we've heard excerpts from these supposed books. Mm-hmm. So it actually feels like something you could do a pretty good spoof of like that. I'm a little tentative to submit the approval, but I feel like it could work.
Yeah. I need to go back and rewatch it. I didn't love it at first, but I have grown to like some of the British comedies, and I do love Matt Berry, so...
I believe it's all on YouTube. So anybody who just wants to try out the first episode, which is a great first episode, look up Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, or if you can't spell Marenghi, just type in Dark Place. It'll get you there. It's one word. That's the name of the hospital.
We also watched a couple trailers. We watched the trailer for Wednesday.
Yep.
This is the Addams Family
spin-off show.
Yeah, it's
what is she, teen?
Yeah, she's a teenage
Wednesday
girl.
Addams.
Teen Wednesday Addams goes to a school, winds up going to this Nevermore Academy, which is like a very gothy school.
Yeah, apparently it was supposed to be like where her parents met and fell in love and blah, blah, blah. I actually had no interest in it, and I'm still not sure it's particularly for me, but the trailer was pretty good.
The trailer is good, and also the girl they've got playing Wednesday is really good.
Yep. In the opening sequence, they show how she got expelled, I guess, from her previous school.
Which is pretty great.
Basically, I guess her brother had been getting bullied by some jocks on the swim team or something like that. They're all in the pool when she walks in, and they're like, hey, you're in the wrong place, or whatever. And she takes out, like, these little bags, like, that you get buy fishes from at this store. And they're filled with piranhas, and she just drops them into the water.
Yeah, it's great.
And, like, there's, like, I forget what it is, but it's, like, operatic music is playing as these guys swim away in slow motion in terror. Very, very well filmed. I believe Tim Burton, by the way, is only producing, not...
That actually makes me more excited about it, because Burton has not done a thing I've liked a lot in a while.
It's been, like, I feel, for me, like, 20 years or more since he's really done anything really good.
But this does feel like his sensibilities.
It does. But it also feels a little, like, there's actually a touch Harry Potter in there, like, the mystery solving, because Wednesday Addams, when she's narrating it, she's like, it seems like, you know, I don't know if people do magic and stuff at this school, but there was a little bit of a...
There was fencing?
There was fencing and stuff that had a little bit of that Harry Potter vibe.
Yep.
And she said something like, she was like, I didn't know what I was in for, like magic and mysteries and stuff like that. And the fact that they drop mysteries does suggest, you know, overarching plots and, you know, that they'll be sneaking around on the school grounds and all kinds of fun with that. And, what was the other thing it made me think of? Oh, well, I mean, like Sabrina, the new Sabrina.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
But yeah, it looked halfway decent, and not too schlocky Tim Burton.
Yeah, I'm curious about it now. Then we saw the trailer for Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities, which is a series of short like episodes, basically mini horror movies by a variety of directors.
Yeah, and kind of a creature feature kind of thing. Yeah. It's like monster centric.
He's very focused on the practical effects of the monsters.
Yeah, it's all. I believe it's like. If not, like maybe they're, I'm sure there's CG assist and stuff, but it's largely, and they show behind the scenes stuff as they're working on these, like, creepy monsters.
Well, and of course, Guillermo del Toro is completely CGI.
Yes, he is. As in life. He is a puppet man.
Yeah, he's been created in CGI in a computer.
And when we were looking around, like, It looks fun. They're adapting. Oh, by the way, what's it for, Randy? What's
Netflix?
Netflix.
They're both on Netflix.
All right. Good luck making it. some of them look to be adaptations. I saw at least two Lovecraft stories in there. And how loose an adaptation or not, I don't know. One was Dreams in the Witch House. The other was Pickman's Model. But, so both of those, and for all I think, there could have been other adaptations of other horror things in there. I'm sure some of them are original stories. But some of the people involved were pretty notable. I don't know if you... Did you jot down some of them?
I did not. You read them off. I thought you remember them.
Oh, God,
what
no.
What was I thinking?
All right. So, one of the directors of it is the director of The Babadook.
I remember that.
That's good. Another one is a guy who I've come to kind of... I'm keeping my eye on him, even though he's just really getting his feet wet. But he was the director of photography for David Fincher on some of his biggest movies. And he did a little proof of concept film about 15 years ago that was really good, just a little 10 or like 20 minute movie, like horror movie. Mm-hmm. And then he did the was it Hollow Man or what's the one that's the Cullen, it's based on loosely on a Cullen Bunn comic.
Empty Man.
Yeah,
I heard that was generally good.
He did that a few years ago, and I just recently watched that, and it is quite good. I really liked it. It's like quasi edging up against Lovecraftian horror and stuff like that, but without like being explicitly so.
Okay.
And it was a very good atmospheric creepy movie.
Catherine Hardwick
from
Hard Candy, I think. And
I think was it Eighth Grade?
I
think I saw like on her list of credits. Oh man, I'm gonna blank. Even though I did read these aloud, I thought you were taking notes, Randy.
No.
But there's like some good names in the mix. They definitely have some people that I would want to check out. So and you know, Del Toro's got his own following. If you like his stuff. One of the better movies I feel like I've seen this last year was his Nightmare Alley.
Still haven't seen that.
Itself a remake of a noir from the 40s, I think, or maybe 50s, that involves, like, kind of kicks off in and around, like, a circus that's, well, sort of a predatory circus with lots of cons and grifts going on, but also the ugly side of things, like a freak show and stuff like that. All those things that Guillermo del Toro can sink his teeth into.
But
who's the that actor who? Oh my goodness!
Steve Buscemi
voices Rocket Raccoon.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Voices Rocket Raccoon.
Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Cooper. Bradley Cooper is in Nightmare Alley as the lead, and to me, I thought it was some of the best stuff I'd seen from him. He was great. So I'm on. Although I'm actually not the biggest fan of Guillermo's horror stuff, I'm enthused for this project of his. I think it could be good.
Yeah, I'm.
Is that on Shudder or no? You said Netflix. That's right.
All right. That's it for us for news. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics for the last couple weeks of August, the 17th and the 24th.
Yep.
The big one from last week, the one that I want to start with, is Shirtless Bear Fighter 2.
Yes. We had already promoted the original Shirtless Bear Fighter, one of the best comics about a man who fights bears that there's been.
I'd say the best comic about a man who
fights bears. Yeah, why bandy about? Let's just say it. It's what it is. He often fighting them, I believe, naked.
Yes.
With his pixelated dong.
Well, and this one, I wasn't sure they were going to do more of it. I felt like they'd kind of done their thing.
Yep.
It's got a lot of action movie cliches, they're deliberately making fun of. I'm going to read the log line of it. Believing the bears that raised him murdered his lover, the man known only as Shirtless became a one-man war on bearer. He became Shirtless Bear Fighter.
A ridiculous... What would it compare to if it were, like, an animated thing?
I don't even know what to compare this to.
It doesn't, like, compare to, like, Rick and Morty, but, like, people who like any kind of, like, ridiculous over-the-top animation might like it. Yeah, you're right. I don't know what it compares
this
to.
This opens with the Special Operations Fuzz Anti-Bear Police Unit fighting come-to-life giant gummy bears.
Yes.
Shirtless Bear Fighter is, in fact... fighting from inside the mad child's stomach.
Fighting a tardigrade.
Yes.
A.K.A. water bears.
Water bear. what's the Fantastic Voyage style? So he is...
Yes.
He is fighting a tiny mechanical gummy bear that is taking control of this child. And, yeah, that's where it starts.
Yeah. This is a ridiculous... Randy, would you say rated R humor?
Yes. Yes, very much.
Just drop the F-bomb? I can't remember.
I believe it does, yes.
Yeah, I can't remember where
we're
also...
is a pixelated dong that leaves little to the imagination.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have to say, it's well drawn. Yep. The cartooning is excellent. I feel like, there's not a lot of kind of humor comics we recommend, but this is the best kind of dumb funny.
Let me give you one little bit of dialogue from the end here.
All right.
It comes from his former boss at Fuzz.
Yep.
She says, "This was a mistake. I thought I was helping you make amends, but all I did was empower you to be a jerk. I'm going to need your badge and your pants."
Yeah, that's great.
It's delightful. If you've not read the trade, I highly recommend it. And I was so happy to see this back and worried that it might not live up to my memories. It, in fact, very much did.
It's from Image, right?
It is from Image, yeah. Yeah, super fun, well worth a look. That pause you heard was Dave and I both drinking Dr. Pepper at the same time.
Yeah, we're not supposed to do it at the same time, right?
No. We're enjoying a delightful Dr. Pepper. It's warm in here. We're both tired.
Yeah.
So we did mention the punch drunk earlier.
Right. You know, it's like it's rained a lot the past few days, but like it's stopped. The sun is kind of out.
Yep.
It's kind of steam like out there. The AC isn't working well in this room. We're sleepy.
We're sleepy.
And it's possible we might both drink Dr. Pepper simultaneously again. If you notice any pauses, just go ahead and picture that.
Assume that we're both drinking Dr. Peppers with our pinkies out.
Yeah.
And then releasing a very soft drink commercial. okay, next up is this week's Minor Threats. This is by Patton Oswalt and Jordan Bloom of Blumhouse.
Actually, that's Jason Bloom. So I thought it was.
I thought
first.
All Blooms were from Blumhouse.
It's not. It's a guy who's like. I think he's either a comedian or something. I looked it up.
Wait,
the other
this
day.
Isn't like Umbrella Academy where all Blooms are part of the Blumhouse.
It's not.
Oh,
Patton Oswalt is Patton Oswalt though.
Yes.
The other guy is like some funny man.
He's from House Oswalt.
Yes.
Is he related to Oswald Cobblepot the Penguin in any way?
I'm going
to
move forward.
All right, go ahead.
The comic.
Yep.
No, actually, I haven't read the whole thing. You've read more of it than I have, Randy.
I did.
But so, it is about C-list villains. It's tongue-in-cheek and funny. And but tell me what the hook is.
Basically, the Insomniac, their Batman type, is now killing villains, or he's like beating them senseless.
Right.
And what happened is that his Robin figure was killed by their Joker figure, and now the Justice League is basically tracking down every villain to try and find the Joker, a.k.a. Stickman, before Insomniac goes crazy and kills someone and ruins all their reputations.
Yeah, so now, the bad guys are like, we need to take down Stickman so that we can just go back to doing our dumb crimes.
Yep.
Like, we want to rob banks, we want to, like, you know, like, just basically be, like, the C-list criminals we are. We can't have the Joker riling up everybody all the time
so
like this.
So, their lead character, most of this from her point of view, she's a bartender at the supervillain bar.
She was a former supervillain. Yeah.
She quit. She's trying to be a mom to her kid. She did her time in prison, but no one will give her a chance. And so she's fine. And her mom was her first, like, boss. She was sidekick to her mom's, like, queen villainy or something. She was Toy Queen. Her mom was Toy Queen. And so she has these powers to basically, it's kind of like Forge of the X-Men. She can take items and build.
Yeah.
She says she can, her gift is take raw materials and somehow my subconscious assembles them into complex machines. Kind of like Toy Box from Top Ten as well.
Yep.
Anyway.
I like all toy-based criminals that aren't the Toy Man.
That's fair. And Toy Man's boring.
Yep.
Anyway, kind of fun. I like this artist. Is it Scott Hepburn?
Yeah. You know what it looked like? It looked like Grant Morrison's crazy designs on Doom Patrol.
Yeah,
and I know he wasn't the artist on that, but a lot of those designs for the villains were art that he had worked out.
The art is great. Like, it's really pretty. But yeah, if you want any sort of superhero, supervillain pastiche by Patton Oswalt that's as funny as you would expect from Patton Oswalt. It's got some funny bits, some good character.
He knows what's up with superheroes.
Yeah. Speaking of funny, it's the week for funny superheroes. Damage Control returns. This is by the creator of TV's The Goldbergs.
Yep.
So it is... Adam Goldberg and Hans Rodionoff, and it is a story of a new kid being brought in as a new intern at Damage Control, and he gets sent to the mailroom, and he makes a mistake, and then they have to rectify it. And it's basically about what a boring office job looks like in the world of Marvel superheroes.
Do we need a quick rewind and just say, do we say what Damage Control originally was?
Yeah, so Damage Control was created as they're the guys who come and clean up after superhero battles.
Right. And it was, you know, the comic itself, even as originally conceived in, what, late 80s, mm-hmm. maybe, was kind of tongue-in-cheek. It was from Dwayne McDuffie, who would go on to later huge heights.
Yep.
With like Justice League Unlimited. This is what he's best known for,
right,
probably.
But also the Milestone Line.
The Milestone Line under the DC umbrella, and tons of really good runs. But yeah, Damage Control, when it was one of his lighthearted concepts, and yeah, it was like the kind of the average Joe's cleaning up big superhero messes. What is there anything that sets this one apart, Randy?
They folded in the movie version. Basically, they talk about the kid who is the head intern is talking to him, and basically talks about how they are now they used to be construction workers and insurance brokers, and now they're a joint venture between Stark Unlimited and the U.S. government. So it's basically like riffing on the version that's in the Spider-Man movies.
Okay, yeah.
And there's a lot of guest star superheroes and supervillains in here. Their warehouse like place they work reminds me a lot of like some of the Men in Black.
Yeah, that's. Definitely the vibe of...
But it's fun. If you like sort of a goofy superhero-themed humor, you want to give this one a look.
Or if you were like a fan of Damage Control from back when.
Dark Horse has regained some of the rights to Star Wars, interestingly.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. It's, you know, for people who don't know, Star Wars comics were coming out through two publishers. Marvel had sort of the core books, but the all-ages stuff was being handled by IDW.
Yeah.
And IDW... lost it, and now the All Ages stuff is at Dark Horse, I believe.
Yeah, so Dark Horse is now, this is their first one. It is set in the world of, it's like Anakin and Obi-Wan and Padme.
It's Clone Wars, the high adventure of the early Clone Wars cartoons, I guess.
There's a young Wookiee in this one. It's fun. If you enjoy the Clone War adventure stuff, and I believe this is going to jump in time, because I think the next one looks like it's a young Luke and Leia.
Okay.
Kind of fun.
Yeah, I'm happy to see Dark Horse get a little bit of small slice of the pie back. Those guys surely put in their time
mm-hmm.
doing some good Star Wars stuff and keeping that license energized when nothing else was.
then there's the this from last week, IDW Originals. The big one was the Dark Spaces Wildfires that was Scott Snyder's firefighters pulling a heist thing.
Yep.
This line, in the same line, is called True Cult, KULT. And it's about... is it? Fast food workers running scams who rob the wrong people?
I believe that is correct. I think that's what I got. some guy who's like been at a dead end job for years, but thinks he can like pull like a little scam and, you know, like make off with the cash box for the night or whatever. Only it turns out like he ends up ripping off a cult and like enraging their their insane cultist people.
Oops.
Yeah, it happens.
So I was looking to see who this writer is. Scott Brian Wilson and Liana Cungus.
Right.
I don't know them.
One of those guys is the Beach Boys.
Oh, yeah.
Brian Wilson.
So Scott Brian, he's written for some of the Pennyworth stuff.
Okay. For DC. Yeah, yeah.
He's written some Batman annuals.
Okay.
Looks like kind of a new up and comer.
Yep.
I was looking to see if there's either one of these people like a person who'd worked on other stuff outside of comics or something. But I believe it may just be them giving a... Liana Cungus has done Ghost Rider. She's the artist. So Star Wars Adventures. It's worked for Vault and Ahoy. So yeah, this is kind of like new creators. So it's... I like the art too. It's got a kind of cool indie vibe to it. From last week, a new initiative, Batman One Bad Day. This is going to be a series of one-shots focusing on Batman's villains and their origins. The first one is...
Actually, not origins specifically.
Is it not their origins?
Nope. Okay. It's, well, you know, this one kind of does and kind of doesn't. You know, now that you say it, maybe it is. I guess it's just that it's also set... it is set in the present, but there's some notable flashbacks. And it's almost... It feels like... As conceived, you're going to have to read it to see what I'm talking about. It feels like it might not be set in the main DC universe. Like, it could be out of context, which I think gives them a little bit more leeway to, tell whatever story they want to. So because this is a dark Riddler story, and I think I can say, without getting into too much detail, this is Tom King. He's already famous for kind of...
Tom King and Mitch Gerads.
Who what all of
that... Adam Strange, I think?
Adam Strange.
Vision, maybe?
And maybe Human Target?
I don't remember. No, Human Target's somebody else.
Okay. But one of the many talented artists he works with, and it's... it kind of is like... I sort of imagines the Riddler not held back by the compulsion to reveal his crimes and riddles. It's like, here's a guy who can be the smartest guy in any room, sort of outthink and outplan just about anybody, including the Joker, and, you know, seeing this dark side of, like, what if he stopped leaving those breadcrumbs? I don't know if I was really on board that take, but, like, with a lot of Tom King's stuff, it's sort of fascinating and a lot of interesting twists and turns.
And if you liked the Batman sort of more psychotic Riddler, maybe...
Yeah, the recent movie, absolutely. Yeah. I would say, yeah, fans of the movie, which is a lot of people, should probably check this one out.
We got Wind, the Throne in the Sky. This is the third... of James Tynion's sort of all ages book. This one, I need to catch up on this. I really liked the first issue and then lost track of it. But this one, I think it was either nominated for or won. It was definitely nominated. Might have won the Eisner for like best all ages book.
I forgot that. Yeah, Tynion, who's like, he staked out so much territory as like the scary, creepy horror guy, R rated, absolutely. I forgot he was doing an all ages book. I need to try it out.
And then. Just a couple of notable things that were in this last couple weeks. The second part of Detective Comics by Rom V and Raphael Albuquerque.
This is the new sort of gothic themed mystery,
yep.
and run on and Batman and it, or Detective. And it's notable, like it's the gothic element is heavy enough that they redid the logo, right? Yeah. Like, they're like, we want this book to have a different feel for a while.
Yeah, it reminds me a little of that Sandman Mystery Theater look.
Yeah, I agree.
I feel like if you really want to get... You need to put on some opera when you read it.
Yeah, that's true. Although, no, you don't want to scare people off. Opera is hated by all.
It's true.
Except...
But it's good. It's a good background. Like, if you see a movie trailer with opera, you know shit's going down.
That is true. That's kind of the vibe it's got. I
love that opera from the Wednesday trailer while you're reading this.
Yes.
DC Mech number 2. This has been surprisingly fun. DC's sort of weird alternate world stuff. I mean, Tom Taylor pioneered all this stuff with Injustice and Deceased.
Yep.
But DC versus Vampires has been fun. This is a world in which Darkseid's going to invade with sort of his, like fourth world kaiju. And so the heroes have these giant mechs. And it's
Am
like,
I correct that there's like not superpowers, so they have to be doing the
mechs? So there seem to be, like, I think that Flash might have powers as well, but he's in a superpowered mech.
Right. It's like, by the rules of this universe, mechs are going to be best for dealing with kaiju.
Yeah. So there's like a Superman mech who came from Krypton, and they don't all trust him. There's a Batman mech who sort of runs the program. The Green Lantern mech is co-piloted by Hal Jordan, and I think... And John Stewart.
That's fun. It's or like it's like a Pacific Rim thing.
No, it's not John Stewart. It's oh yeah, it is John Stewart. But I thought I also saw the girl from what do you call it? Mm.
The recent one.
Yeah.
Hey, but maybe yeah, not. I can't say her name.
I thought she was part of their ground crew or something. At any rate, it's surprisingly fun and weird.
Yeah.
And they're doing some interesting stuff with, like, Lex Luthor, and Shara Hall makes an appearance.
It sounds like they're doing what's kind of neat about these alternate world things, which is create a fun playground.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like that what you've just described is actually, other than having the DC characters, it is not a particular cliche. Those are all kind of fun, wonky, ridiculous, and cool ideas. So,
also Shara Thal is Batman's godmother in this one. So,
oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I'll have to take a look at that. I haven't gotten around to it, but when you've described it, it sounded fun to
me. It's fun. There's also the newest issue of Robin, which is leading into the Batman versus Robin, which I, by the way, have read an advanced copy of. It's Mark Waid and Mahmoud Azrar, and it's really good. I'm super excited for it.
Wait, what is Batman versus Robin?
It's the new miniseries that's coming out.
Why is Batman fighting Robin?
Robin may have been possessed by something.
What?
Yes.
Okay.
You'll have to tune in to see.
That's Damian Robin?
Yep.
Who?
And then
I have to say, like, they've done a good job over the years of convincing me that Damian is extremely dangerous.
Yeah.
And, like, could potentially match and or beat Batman in just raw combat.
Yep.
So, yeah, possessed him would be a bad thing.
Then we've got the latest issue of I Hate This Place, the Image horror comic that we've all been liking. I'm a little behind on it, but I've been really enjoying it.
Yeah, that's the two girlfriends that end up, one of them inherits some property.
Yeah.
And it's the property comes with not just one, but many strange things going on. Right. It is both funny and like properly weird, and has some good character beats in it too.
And then two Image trades this week: Step by Bloody Step, the silent comic involving a giant rescuing a young girl. This is a beautiful comic, by the way. If you've not seen it, it is just spectacularly pretty, and sort of a fantasy thing where there's this giant taking a girl across the world for some reason.
You know, there's comics being the visual medium that they are. I don't know that people had ever thought about, you know, anything more than really like short silent sequences, you know, 2 to 5 pages.
Right.
Until the G.I. Joe silent issue was like, I'm going to tell you a whole story and I'm going to do it great.
Right.
And now, like it's something, you know, I know that there were always probably people like probably doing more experimental stuff in, I'm going to say, heavy metal and things like that. And wouldn't you say, Randy, this is kind of more in that ballpark? Not in the R-rated heavy metal, but in that sense that it's like sort of fantasy kind of...
I can definitely see that.
It has very beautiful art and stuff. Yeah.
And then Rogue Sun, Volume 1. This is part of the Radiant Black universe, which, Dave, you've read the first volume now?
I read Radiant Black. It was great.
As it grows, it continues. Rogue Sun is my favorite spinoff of the ones they've done
so far.
That's
the New Orleans one?
It's in New Orleans. It's almost a little more Ghost Rider-y because he's got, like, mystical powers. And it's a son who's, like, the black sheep of the family, and he gets his dad's superhero identity when he dies. And it's, like, tied into, like, the rest of the family wanted the powers. And
yeah.
It's really good. I really enjoyed this one. And it's a different vibe than Radiant Sun.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out because Radiant Sun seemed broadly like sci-fi,
a little Power Rangers inspired. Yeah,
yeah. But you know what's interesting? It's like Power Rangers by way of Invincible. It has both that edge of being like somewhere between PG-13 and R at times.
Yeah,
and also trying to not trying to do what Marvel and DC are. I feel like people who like Invincible should be reading the Radiant Black universe.
Oh,
and a lot of them are, by the way. That's why it's doing so well.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, you can get in on board. They're only, like, a few volumes into Radiant Black, the core series. I think try that out is a great lead-in for just about anything else. But then there's also Radiant Red and Rogue Sun and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it's a cool superhero universe that you could get in on the ground floor. And I think it'd be like walking in on Invincible if Invincible had a few sister books right out of the gate.
Yeah. Do you remember, Dave, that Invincible was launched as part of the Image superhero line?
It was or wasn't?
It was.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember Fire Breather?
Yeah, yeah.
I liked Fire Breather. It was Phil Hester writing.
It was good. The little half-dragon man.
Yeah, and then
There was something else in there.
Jay Farber's Noble Causes maybe might have been alongside that.
Right, that was like... Is that the one that was like the political dynasty family?
The soap opera type? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was launched alongside. I feel it was part of that universe. But there were like four books.
Yeah.
And Invincible's the one that stuck around. But it was supposed to be a little mini superhero universe.
This seems like it was built from the ground up to be kind of more integrated.
Yeah.
And they work so much better, I think, overall than that.
Yeah. It's really good. I highly recommend it. All right. That is our comics talk for the week. We'll be back in just a moment to talk about a couple of comics-themed TV shows. All right, so we're going to start off with a spoiler warning. If you've not seen the first episode of She-Hulk on Disney Plus, Dave and I are going to spoil it.
Yep.
I was worried because Dave's not always big on the comedy stuff that you weren't going to like it, but you liked this quite a bit.
I did. I think it's more that I have sort of specific things I'm looking for in comedy, and there's like certain vibes of humor that I'm not really into. Just random, rapid fire humor that's like. I feel like the Rick and Morty style or something like that. Actually, I say that. I've never really watched Rick and Morty. I think I actually might like it.
You might love it. Dave, what about this? How about a man being hit in the groin with a football?
Good times.
Yeah, okay.
Definitely right. good times.
Yeah.
No, She-Hulk is witty. I have been a fan of She-Hulk from back in the day. I post about this on social media just to say that my bona fides on She-Hulk are that I remember the character joining the Avengers in Roger Stern's run, which was a great run.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, I see. This is I figured out what her deal was. She was the person who liked being the Hulk, and like she didn't transform back into Jennifer Walters very often, and she kind of lived it up. And then John Byrne did his comic later, which did the before Deadpool kind of got around to it. She was breaking the fourth wall.
Yep.
And dealing with all these fun C-list villains. And she was also, it doesn't hurt when you also have a sexy character.
So was the Byrne run sort of your favorite? Or like was that your sort of formative for the character for you?
I mean, the Roger Stern's Avengers preceded that, and that was more serious take on the character. But she was lighthearted, but she didn't break the fourth wall or anything yet.
Yeah.
But Byrne and Stern are friends, and I think that what happened was Byrne just kind of was like, let me see what I can do with that,
Yeah, I think, I remember, Dave, I think that this...
And when she, of course, she had been in Fantastic Four during Byrne's run.
Right. This was sort of formative for me as well. Like, I knew she'd been in Fantastic Four, although I'd not read it, but her in the Avengers was a big thing.
Yep.
And then her, I know she was like buddies with the Wasp.
Yep.
And then
she dated Wyatt Wingfoot over in Fantastic Four, and she filled in for the Thing when they needed a powerhouse set at times.
So I've always liked the character, and then Dan Slott did a really great run with her.
Yep. His was like kind of more like fun superhero legal wrangling and stuff like that.
And then later on, Charles Soule, who was actually a practicing attorney,
yep.
did a really good run with her as well.
Another good run.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I'm liking the current run, even though it's a weird stealth book for Jack of Hearts. I don't know how that happened. I like Jack of Hearts fine, but...
Yeah, she's had a lot of good runs. And
it
is crazy, by the way, with the show out that there's none of that in print.
Yeah, we were trying to figure that out, and I cannot.
The Charles Soule stuff is going to be coming back in print in October.
Right, but not exactly right in when the show is hitting.
But yeah, it's a little weird that there's not more of it available, especially the Dan Slott stuff, which is clearly formative on this from what we can see so far.
So not to keep people on their on the edge of their seat, but I actually ended up quite liking it.
And so did I. I was very pleased. I was pretty sure I was going to like this just based on Tatiana Maslany was great in Orphan Black. The bitch she had in Parks and Rec.
She is the showrunner.
She is the star.
The star, right.
Yeah. And so when they cast her, I was like, okay, that's good casting. And
she is playing Jennifer?
Jennifer, yes.
Okay. But she doesn't play her when she's She-Hulk.
Yeah, she plays her when she's She-Hulk.
She does. Oh, yeah. Okay. You know what? I thought that was maybe a different actress.
No, it's the same actress.
Oh, okay. Well, she's giant, but also, they did change her hair and stuff very specifically. I don't know.
She doesn't actually turn green.
I mean, I wasn't sure if it was, mainly... Like some, I actually thought it might be some sort of bigger actress, not literally 8 feet tall or whatever, but CG enhanced.
No, it's just like Ruffalo. It's mocap.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, that's pretty impressive then, because she has enough of a different vibe that it feels like she is transformed.
Yeah. Well, Orphan Black, Tatiana Maslany.
That's like the thing.
What's that?
Well, go ahead, finish your thought.
So she plays clones,
right?
And they were all very different. And
right.
She played them so effectively, you forgot it was all the same actress.
Right.
So this is kind of her thing.
Right.
But I think that the first episode, I was liking it from the outset, where she's getting a legal argument.
Yep.
There's a guy trying to, the other lawyer trying to mansplain to her the whole time.
Yep. And it's just the opening to it.
And
basically.
She turns around and starts talking. And she's like, "Look, you're not going to be able to focus on our lawyer show until I tell you about the whole Hulk thing. And I loved that. That was like immediately, she's talking to the camera, and 100% right, that's where I was. I was at the point of like, okay, when do we get to the She-Hulk part?
Right. Yeah, subverting both their own premise and guessing at fan expectations was pretty clever. Yeah. And a way to sort of move the show into kind of a quick overdrive.
But I thought the chemistry between Ruffalo and Maslany is fantastic.
Yep. Just real quick, traditionally She-Hulk in the comics, she is Jennifer Walters is Bruce Banner's cousin, mm-hmm. and I think back in the day it was like she was involved in a case with the mob and she got shot.
Got shot up by the mobsters.
And he gave her a blood transfusion to save her life and she got Hulk blood in her. Something like that happens in this, but it's a mystery because it's some alien-looking spaceship, which I don't know if I'm supposed to know what that is, but I don't know if I do.
He mentions it's a Sakaaran courier craft, and that's from... Oh. That's from Planet Hulk, whatever, the Ragnarok.
Thor Ragnarok,
and
right.
I believe he doesn't seem overly concerned about it. He's just like, weird shit happens with the Hulk. And so I think that was meant to be almost a gag. Like, basically there was a ship, probably the Grand... I mean, I'm hoping it's Grandmaster, was, like, looking for him.
Right.
And someone sent him a message, and it just happened to come at a bad time.
I bet it's going to pay off, though.
Yeah, oh, I think it will, too.
There will still be some follow-up to it.
But the whole thing
about that... It did change her life forever, as he reminds her many times throughout the first episode. He's like, you're not going to be able to, you know, to go back on this. And, of course, the running thing is that some of his expectations of what it means to be a Hulk are not true of her.
No, they're based on him.
Yeah.
Because they haven't touched on this too much, but in the comics, he has a... multiple personality disorder.
Right.
And that was exacerbated by the Hulk. I don't know if they're going to go that way in the MCU, but the whole notion of, like, she reacts differently to it because she doesn't have the same mental issues that he does.
Right. And that's how they've always done the Hulks, at least since, I guess I would say, the 80s, maybe, is that, like, any person who gets exposed to gamma radiation kind of comes out different. Yeah. Even Sasquatch was originally conceived as, and I don't know if this is still how they explain it, as Gamma Ray created.
Yeah.
He's like the one non-green dude. But like the leader, it made super smart. Abomination, it just turned into... Like, he's kind of like... He kept his intelligence, but he's kind of just brutish.
He's just mean.
He's just mean. And he was already mean because he was a mean Russian man.
Yes. but anyway, I think the one gripe I have... I don't have a lot of gripes about the show. I thought it was a really good pilot.
Mm-hmm.
The one gripe I have is that... She gets the blood in her bloodstream really easily, just like a little bit, and suddenly she's a Hulk.
Yeah.
And he mentions that, like, the blood that she got was like a lethal dose of gamma radiation. I'm like, oh, well, that's real dangerous if the Hulk's blood is... That's like making the Hulk alien-level blood dangerous.
You know, because he doesn't bleed very often, I think there's not much that hits him hard enough to make him bleed. I just kind of took it as, like, just superhero conventions. Like, I don't expect them to particularly ever follow up on it unless there's a storyline that makes it convenient.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
that's the thing. I have issues with the over... I mean, I've seen internet wormhole rabbit hole discussions already.
Yeah.
But that didn't make any sense. What about this and this and this? And I don't like it because of that, because I didn't think it all the way through.
Uh-huh.
But also, I'm willing to accept superhero convention. Stop worrying about it.
Yeah, this is one of those cases where I think I'm glad I'm not necessarily in those groups, because I haven't seen anybody chatting about anything so granular as that. Yeah.
But also, I mean, they do... He destroys her blood sample, because he points out how dangerous their blood is.
Right.
And so they are wanting to draw attention to it.
Right. Well, in other words, he doesn't want it, like, going to some bad people. He doesn't want Hydra to get Hulk blood and start making an army of Hulks or whatever.
Right, that'd be a good story, though.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll happen at some point, or somebody will come after her.
But also, I like that instead of, like, doing the mobster and the blood transfusion and all that stuff, it's a very simple, oh, there was an accident, she became Hulk.
Right. And like, that's pretty quick.
Good. Fast, yeah.
And then it becomes this kind of fun, you know, like... It's always fun in movies to get a good training montage.
Yeah.
And essentially, you know, after a little bit of sort of more serious stuff, always tinged with comedy, though.
Yeah.
It's a training thing where, you know, you find out that Hulk had this, it's a bar and escape and, like, place to kind
and
of...
lab.
And a lab and stuff that Tony built for Bruce back in the day.
During the blip.
During the blip.
I do love the blip has become the name.
Oh, yeah, that's right, that's right. So that he could process his growing control over the Hulk and try and work through that, which ironically she is able to sort of circumvent very quickly.
Yep.
I guess this is... I sometimes don't even know how big the actual pushback is and how much trolls are just being
loud.
Oh,
it's a lot of trolling. It's a lot of dumb trolls.
Yeah, but like, you know, she basically says like she's had to like kind of have a cap, like learn how to control her anger in a much more sort of visceral way than he has, because women are so sort of constantly scrutinized, catcalled, told to smile, and all that stuff.
Every woman I know has just, like, nodded vigorously at that whole scene.
Yeah. And I think all guys are like, what? Or, like, too many guys. Too many guys don't get it.
Not the people we know most.
Right, right. I think most of them are a little more thoughtful about it. But, yeah, the fact that, you know, like, most women you know probably have at some point left a supermarket in a sort of a quiet parking lot and carried their keys between their fingers to try and stab someone that might attack them.
Yeah.
Like, that is just a super common experience that most guys do not deal with. Like, that should tell you all you need to know right there. This is a true difference. And by the way, in the comic, it was they didn't have that explanation. That was it was just like gamma rays affected her different.
Yeah.
But I thought that was a very clever way to tie it into something that is a real thoughtful observation.
And this is the one thing. This is something the MCU does really well. Is they look at the comics. They took the fourth wall breaking, the lawyer stuff. They're doing a lot of the stuff in the comics, but they always put a spin on it. Of hey, let's think about this from modern day and apply this, and so in so doing they basically improve this. Did the same thing with Moon Knight, the same thing with Ms. Marvel.
Yep.
I love all the comics, I always will. There's definitely stuff in the comics I like better,
right?
But the MCU has done a good job of like, hey, let's put a little thought into this
and not just literally adapt it.
And I thought that was really good. I think that notion of like what it means to be a woman, and they do a lot of that stuff. The women in bathrooms will always help you out thing that they get there. And then, of course, the guys harassing her right outside the bar.
Yeah.
They touched on a lot of that stuff without making it, I thought, too heavy-handed.
I agree.
And I thought it was all done really well.
I also just liked the interaction between the two cousins.
Yeah.
They're kind of both pig-headed in their way. She's got, like, pig-headed lawyer instincts. He's got pig-headed, kind of like egotistical scientist instincts,
he's like, I've tested all this. Why won't you listen to me?
Right, and I've been around the block as a Hulk, and like, so there are times when I'm like, he's right, Jen. You should listen to him. And then I'm, and so they both get to kind of be right.
Yeah,
they both get to kind of show each other up sometimes, and it's kind of fun, like brother sister kind of vibe to it.
Yeah.
They straight up, in the tradition of like an old school comic, they get in a fight, and it's like a fight where they're like punching each other through trees and shit.
Yeah, it was super fun.
And then you get to see like the Hulk ground pound and variations on some of that stuff.
The clap.
That's the kind of fun idea of doing these sort of recurring clap as a
she has a different style.
She rattles him up. Yeah.
And then we get a little tiny bit of the courtroom at the end. We see Titania.
Yep.
Their new version of that from Jameela Jamil from The Good Place.
Smash into a courtroom, and She-Hulk just like has to. Jennifer has to transform at that point. I do. You know, if I had one complaint for me, it was just that was sort of brought up without her even saying, like, without even somebody giving any exposition, I think, that was like, it's an escaped super convict or whatever. We don't even know anything about
her. I believe we're going to get the context in the next episode.
Yeah. And I could wait an episode to find out.
And then there's the stinger.
There's the stinger, yeah.
There's a running gag about her theory that, which
came about when they were both drunk.
Yes. But also, she's clearly been, she had a chart. She's been working on this for a while.
Yes.
Because she asked him about it on the drive up before she's ever a Hulk. She's already talking about it. Like, this is one of those internet theories. I love the Marvel Universe when they do this kind of stuff of like,
acknowledging fan theories in a way.
Yes, and that kind of thing. So the notion, she's like, Captain America was a virgin when he went in the ice, and therefore he was a virgin when he died. That's the theory.
Yeah.
And they pay it off with the funniest stinger I think they've ever done.
Yeah, we should repeat it because in the off chance you didn't watch through to the credits and you're listening to this and you know everything else but that.
Oh my God, watch the stinger. It is perfectly edited. It made me laugh out loud.
Yeah, same here. Same here. Fantastic. And just that would be a concern, and also that she would be so excited at sort of a certain realization. was just great.
Yeah. And then I want to real quick mention, we talked about The Sandman a couple weeks ago, but Netflix dropped a bonus 11th episode recently, which has...
That was cool. Like, I don't think anybody knew that was going to happen.
No, I mean, Gaiman did, but none of the rest of us did.
He's a sneaky Brit.
He's a sneaky Brit. So this is a two-parter, and it is the Dream of a Thousand Cats and the Calliope, which are both single-issue stories that are in The Sandman. Dreams and Nightmares? I forget what the story's called. Third volume of the book, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to blank on it at this particular moment.
It's in book two of the new collections.
Yeah.
But the Dream of a Thousand Cats is animated, has a spectacular voice cast, including Neil Gaiman himself.
And you said the animation was cool?
Oh, the animation's really nice. And
man, what a thing to keep like under your belt.
Yeah, and the story. I mean, here's the thing. One of the things I wondered in watching season one is how are they going to deal later on with the stories that are sort of tangential to Morpheus himself.
Right.
And this is how they're going to do it, and it's great. Like, Morpheus shows up in both of these, but he is by no means the central character. And so,
I've heard some, you know, like, among the criticisms I've heard of Sandman, is that, like, and this isn't always, like, some critics will say that this is okay, but it's notable that, you know, that it is a little meandery or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it comes from a comic that's meandery, mm-hmm. and, like, think... Like, you can potentially make that the strength. As long as people are on board for the ride and kind of trust in your storytelling, then I think you're gonna be okay. But they have amped up Morpheus's role. Yeah. He's at least got a footprint in there.
And also, the season one, they definitely did not meander. Like, they go various places, but by making the Corinthian a common thread, I feel right. like they did a great
it's
job.
It's more tightly focused than yeah. the comic was.
Anyway, these two stories, the standalone animation one is really, really good. I won't spoil it for anybody who hasn't read it, but it is a really good story. Well done. Like I say, amazing voice cast. And then the second one, Calliope, features Arthur Darvill, a.k.a. Rory from Doctor Who.
Yep.
As a failing novelist. He wrote one novel, and now he's having trouble. He's having real writer's block. And he gets a muse from an old washed-up sci-fi writer.
Yep.
And he basically keeps her hostage to try and give him ideas.
Right, like a literal muse of the Greek gods, yeah. Greek lore.
And it's really well done. It's a great adaptation. I actually think, as with some of the other stuff, I think they actually improved on the comic.
Mm-hmm.
I think they made a couple things a little less blunt than they needed to be.
Yeah, less lurid, maybe.
Yeah, and that's it. I think the comic still does something. 24/7 in the comic is still stronger than 24/7 in the show, even though it's a really good adaptation. The comic just does something that the show can't.
Is it Dream Country?
It's Dream Country.
Yeah.
That's the third one.
When I remembered, it was, I think, Kelly Jones' artwork, mm-hmm. and then I could remember the title.
Yeah. Anyway, fantastic couple episodes that actually show, okay, so this is how they could do the Dream Country stuff, and now I'm even more excited for a season two. I can't wait to see more of this. And Netflix better fucking do it.
Yeah, it's like Neil Gaiman himself has posted that it's still kind of up in the air, even though they're like the most watched show
for
on
Netflix.
For 2 weeks,
they were the most watched show in the world.
Yeah. It's nuts that something like that could get canceled, but it's like the strange state of things. Yeah,
and things are weird. And I don't know, somehow Discovery is canceling everything, even shows they don't own, so...
By the way, although I don't think we'll talk about it until next week, so you're going to see House of the Dragon,
yes.
the new spinoff of
yeah,
Game of Thrones.
Yeah, we haven't talked House of the Dragon yet.
But I want to go ahead and throw out a general, to help maybe get this on its feet, a general recommendation that people check it out. I watched it last night. It did take me a little while to sort of win me over to get me on board and interested in, you know, what happens next. And, you know, it's not quite as gangbusters an opening as Game of Thrones had. But I feel like if you're a Game of Thrones fan, even one who was kind of soured on it, I recommend giving it a shot and seeing what you think. Okay. I think it's at least earned that much.
I'm gonna give it a look. Also, it's a good time for TV right now. We're about to have She-Hulk on for about 9 weeks.
Yep.
Harley Quinn's has a really strong season three. They're about halfway through, mm-hmm. or a little over halfway through. What We Do in the Shadows, season three or four, I can't remember which one, is doing real good.
Yep.
And then Only Murders in the Building season two ended this week as we record. There's a lot of good stuff on TV right now,
yeah.
on the streaming shows, until, again, somehow Discovery cancels all of it. All right, that's it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.